No Syntax is brought to you by Caffeine Driven Media, where we drink coffee for when brain no have wake up good for think to do. Hello and welcome to No Syntax. I am Landon Isles, your host. Welcome to episode 16, given on this day, 25 August 2019. I'm glad to be here to talk to you all about shit, reading your emails and discussing your comments and points of view. Why? Because, as always, you make this show great. Good morning, everyone. It is August 25th, 2019. It's a little bit after 9 a.m. We got started a little late this morning, even though we've been up early. Even though we've been up a little bit early, we were brewing coffee. We're drinking copious amounts. I am trying to do what I can to slow my conversation down, to slow the way I speak down, because I am really, really caffeinated. If you've been following Instagram and Facebook, you see that I posted about reviewing Black Insomnia Coffee Company. And we got the order in yesterday, made some yesterday, and made two batches this morning. So to put it in perspective, yesterday we tried it with a traditional coffee maker. This morning we made it with Chemex, and then we did French press. So we went through three different variations of making the coffee. All three of them were great. I'm not trying to throw the review up, but I will tell you, I am starting to... I'm really starting to just steer away from traditional coffee makers. And I'll talk about it more later. But yeah, just traditional coffee makers. I love mine. I have a Breville. To me, that is like the Cadillac of coffee makers. And I love it. I love the setup. I love the model that I bought. I've had it for a number of years. Totally like it. But I will tell you that there is a difference between making coffee through a coffee maker and then making coffee through other, you know, other means, other form factors, if you will. Freaking phenomenal. But I'll get to that later. What I wanted to do was talk a little bit about last episode, where we had our favorite librarian, Miss Leslie, on the show, and she did send us an email. This was a follow-on to our chat, and it's a rather lengthy email, which is fine, but I wanted to go ahead and share it with you because she brought some things to light during the course of her email that we didn't really get into during our chat on episode 15. So she starts off, "Landon, I really did enjoy our long chat. I was so surprised when you mentioned how long we had been talking, and I forgot to ask you something. Are you Jim or are you Landon when face-to-face?" Well, I'm going to tell it like this, and I'm going to keep it as simple as possible. Coffee, excuse me. This is the way I look at it. I allow people to make the determination on what they want to call me, and it just makes it easier that way. I answer to everything. Now, I will say the delineation between Jim and Landon has to do with two separate podcasts. And I did that purposefully for the reason of I wanted to have that delineation. I'm Jim on one podcast, I'm Landon on the other. Now, to be clear, James is my birth name, Landon is my middle name. Okay? As far as my first name is considered, yes, on my birth certificate it says James. But people I've noticed will call me by different variations of my first name. Some will call me Jim, some will call me Jimmy, some will call me James, some will call me Jimbo, some will call me Jimeth. Believe it or not, I answer to them all. So I don't have the preference. I leave the preference on the individual. I've been called worse. That's fine. But I leave it up to you as to what you want to call me. But face to face, nobody's ever really called me Landon until they found out my middle name was Landon. Then some people refer to me as Lando, which is really, really odd because as much as I'm a Star Wars fan and I like Lando Calrissian, I don't think that the name fits me as a first name face to face. Just saying. Anyway, she goes on to say, "And we did meet on Facebook through a mutual friend who was attending UIW. So I had a Facebook friend on my old Facebook account that I went to high school with, and she was friends with Leslie, and that's how Leslie and I connected due to some of the posts that I was posting on Facebook. So that's how we met." To finalize that, I know we talked about that we met on Facebook, but we didn't get into the details overall. She goes on to say, "Damn it, I have an accent. And on the fly, I a lot. Doesn't happen in class since I know my subject matter inside and out. Occasionally, a student does ask a question that makes me go, like the woman who asked, how do we know library resources are reliable? That was a head scratcher." You know, when I went back and read the email earlier before reading it now on the show, I was looking at that and I thought about it for a little bit. And let me see if I can kind of see where she's coming from, where she's seeing things from her lens. And I understand why it's also a head scratcher, because you're like, well, it's a library. This is a place, an institution of information. Now, whether or not that information is directly true, 100% true, you would like to assume so. You know, when you talk about people who write books, you like to think that there's not going to be any personal bias, that they are publishing the facts. But I look at it as, depending on when a book was written, those were the facts for that time period. So that information is may not be relevant now because things change, but for that time period, that information is relevant. Therefore, it could be construed as true. That's the way I look at it. From another perspective, if you take the internet and you go to Wikipedia, where people can go in and manipulate information as they see fit, now I look at that as, how do I know the information on the website is reliable? You can't modify a book. You can publish a new book with new findings, with new information, but it's not changing the original context completely because you still have that data. Now, somebody going in on the internet and going to Wikipedia will turn around and modify the information. And unless that old information is saved, it is completely lost. So how do you know what is the most current and qualified information? So if I utilize no syntax and put it in Wikipedia and put the history of the podcast in Wikipedia and I do it, okay, bam, then it would be true because that would be information coming from me. But say a listener of the show remembers something I said in a particular podcast and I referenced it differently on the Wikipedia page, then that individual is modifying the information based on something that I said. So therefore, in my mind, it's true. But if somebody on the outside looks at something and says, oh, yeah, you didn't state this correctly, I'm going to change it. Well, it might be true, it said differently. But who's to say somebody's not going to go out there and put some bogus information out? Historical wise, I'm no longer talking about the Wikipedia for no syntax, but puts out information because of their personal bias or what they think happened. What is the real story? I almost equivocate this to, if you think about the Bible, and any one of us could read the Bible and read a passage and say, oh, that applies to this, or this is how I perceive it. To me, it's all subjective. I've heard stories, rumors, conspiracy theorists who talk about that people wanted to utilize the Bible to keep the masses on track, to keep them in fear of God. They would never be in fear of God if we keep these other chapters in the book, because these other chapters go completely against the social norm. We can't have sin. So therefore, let's remove the pages that reference it in a direct manner to Jesus or Mary or whatever, so that people don't get the wrong idea. Our God is holy, our Jesus is holy, and therefore we're going to keep everybody on the right path by only allowing the masses to read what they want them to read. Sound familiar? I guess. But I look at it from that perspective, right? So I don't really get wrapped around it. If somebody tells me, hey, I need you to write a paper on this, I'm going to go write a paper. I'm going to gather all the facts. I'm going to get all my references and I'm going to cite the data. I'm going to look for some balances. I'm going to look for some inconsistencies in between and see if it all correlates, right? And in hopes that the paper that I write, the information that I publish is at least 90% true. It may not be 100% true. Hell, it may not even be 90% true. But the preponderance of the data and the information that I collated, calculated, and wrote down, that, hey, it is the right information. And I'm giving you the current information in hopes that maybe my resources are reliable. But who knows? Why get bent out of shape about it? You've been assigned a task. Go do your task. Use the library as a reference. Cite your references. You can't go wrong. What the fuck? Maybe that's the reason why you're scratching your head, Leslie. It took me the long way around to figure that out. Anyway, she also cannot fib on the fly. I'll blurt out the uncomfortable truth when I'm not expecting a particular question or comment. And that is always good. That's what I appreciate about you, Leslie, the most. She also goes on to say, I went to UT Austin right after high school. I was totally unprepared for the rigors of college-level studies. I was bored out of my mind in high school and coasted. It was a low-performing school, so I could make A's in most classes without trying, so I had no idea how to study when I got to college, and my first semester was rough. It got better, but I really had to work for good grades in classes that were required but didn't interest me. And I completely get it, and I think I've talked about this before. Most of my friends, and this was kind of an odd thing, and this isn't being disrespectful to my friends at all. I had a multitude of friends who got full ride scholarships to officer producing schools, you know, like West Point, VMI. I've got other friends that got full ride scholarships to MIT, basically Ivy League colleges and universities outside of West Texas, right? So all these people were leaving to go to these major schools and military academies. And, you know, I thought wonderfully of everybody, you know, well-deserving. I wasn't one of those individuals that chased anything like that because I knew at that point in time in high school, my priorities were so fucked up that being self-aware that I was fucked up, there was no way I was going to be able to attend a major university or even community college without feeling as though I was going to fail out the first semester. I didn't want to do that to myself. I didn't want to do that to my family. And it was one level of embarrassment that I wanted to totally avoid because I was aware of it. I was aware of how immature that I was, and it just wasn't going to fare well for me. But one thing that I did find was a lot of my friends, not all of them, but some of them who went on to these military academies or universities found out the same thing. In some cases, it was not that they failed out, they just realized that it was a really hard climb that they weren't prepared for. Others, I think, missed being home. They wanted to be near family. So they came back and they went to a local university in West Texas, or they went to another university that was closer to home. And I can't fault them for that. I mean, it really, realistically, high school does not prepare you for college. I had one teacher, and I know I referenced her on the last episode, English teacher, Miss Towers. She was probably the only teacher I recall who would put information on the chalkboard. She gave you her syllabus the first day, and if you weren't paying attention, you were fucked. If you didn't go in and read the board, you were screwed. You know, the grade point average that you deserve was based on your ability to pay attention to detail and do the homework. And if you didn't do it, well, guess what? You didn't pass. And guess what? It happened to me. So I had wound up taking her class twice in my senior year, in the morning and in the afternoon. And there was some benefits to it, but it was a big disadvantage because I could have been taking another class or reduced my classes because I only needed so many more hours to graduate. But overall, I mean, I was actually, in my honest opinion, I was not a very stellar student. I'm not saying that I wasn't smart. Certainly I had my challenges. I'm not a math person. I didn't get the math gene. I got the English and writing gene. And even then, my writing sucks. I really need to improve upon it. But overall, I have a better understanding of it than of math. I overcomplicate math, and that's just the way that I am. Furthermore, she goes on in the email, poor Miss Wheeler. And I believe Miss Wheeler was our elementary school librarian. I could see her face as plain as day. Her hair, and she was tall. I swear she was like 6'4". Of course, I was a little runt back then, but she was tall. She was like Amazonian to me. Anyway, she says, to be a school librarian, you have to be certified to teach, and you have to teach 4 to 5 years and get the light master's degree in library science before you can move into a library position. I never knew there was a degree for being a librarian. I thought maybe if you had English and writing or something that had to do with the English arts, that would correlate. So Leslie, you'll have to tell me a little bit more about this master's degree in library science. She goes on to say that Miss Wheeler probably didn't like teaching much and thought the library would be more better. It's been a good career for me, but it's more working with people than it is love of books or love of reading. Those are piss poor reasons to go into it. I don't know. I would kind of sort of disagree because I like reading. And if my job was to be in a library where I have a really deep knowledge of the books that are there, that I could be like the idiot savant of the library because I'd work on as reading as many as I can during the course of my time there. I don't know. But that's just me. She got into it by accident. She planned on law school, but never liked anyone who was pre-law or in law school. I liked the people I worked with in the library, and I went that route. Good librarians have a great sense of humor and tend to be very interesting. Very true. Bad librarians, and they exist, suck the life out of you. I haven't experienced one like that yet, and I couldn't say that Miss Wheeler sucked the life out of me, but she had the personality of cardboard, in my opinion. But I think at that point in time, being as young as I was, I probably viewed her, because she was an adult, like kids would view us as adults now, you know, that we're weird and that we're this or that or the other. So they have their opinions about us like we had our opinions about adults when we were kids, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, she says, your grandparents sound like my father's mother. He didn't like her much at all, nor did we. She was stiff and starchy. there's a bad innuendo with stiff and starchy. I'm not going to get into that. Maybe later. Anyway, Ed adored my mother's mother. She was as sweet as the day is long, just like mother was. My brother, sister, and I had to stay with her one summer, and she never locked the door on us. She did like us out all outside early in the day because she cleaned that house every day. Yeah, my grandparents, like I said, it was like in, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, going into their house is like going into a museum. You can't touch everything. Very dark, very cold. And that's exactly what my grandparents' house was. And they complained about everything, you know, and my grandmother, God rest her soul, my grandfather, God rest his soul, as much as I didn't get along with them as I became a younger adult and the shit that, they put my mom through growing up. I got to the point where I just couldn't deal with it. It wasn't fun. You know, I was always envious of my friends' grandparents because, you know, I would meet their grandparents and they were like totally off the chain. You know, they were like older kids and they made the most of it. Grandparents are supposed to be fun. My grandparents weren't fun at all, period. Anyway, moving on. Decorating tips. Mother left me her condo when she died, and it's much smaller than the one I owned in the next building. I just got rid of stuff, books, clothes, cookware, knickknacks, and more. For the most part, the walls are bare, and I try to keep as much stuff as possible off surfaces. Zen-like and calming is what I'm aiming for, but it will become a tad untidy once school starts. The first 6 weeks are killer, lots and lots of one-time library classes in addition to the 4-credit classes. So yeah, I can only imagine, you know, certain times of the year, my office down here gets messy and I get shit just strewn all over the place. And I think it takes me 6 months before I actually clean it. I'm still working at stuff in the studio, trying to do that Zen-like feng shui type thing. Just yesterday, I offloaded some collectibles that had been in a box on top of my table here in the middle of the studio. And I was like, shit, I haven't even put these on display yet. So I spent time doing that yesterday. So I was like, wow, I'm really proud of myself that I accomplished one little thing where it looked like crap because I had boxes on the table. If you ever seen the movie The Intern, where they had the one table in the office where everybody was just piling old books and binders on, that was my table here. So I was glad I got that done yesterday. Yay for me. She goes on, we were talking about a book of military history, in reference to the Big Red One. I had an opportunity to serve with them for a year in a position before I had to leave again and, go on to Kuwait. But the book entitled, for those history buffs out there, for those military buffs, The Dead and Those About to Die is the book she mentions. A good read that left me in awe of those men. My father's best friend, several years older than he, was in one of the first tanks to make it onto Omaha Beach that first day. Now, I will tell you, if you ever get a chance to visit Fort Riley, Kansas, go to the Fort Riley Museum and learn the history of the Big Red One. I was in complete awe getting stationed there, even though I was only there for a year. My welcoming to the post was awesome. I got there, and during the in-processing, now you won't get this as a civilian. I imagine as a civilian, if you go in there and you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to go run around with military folks in a formation, what they do is every in-processing, they have an in-processing unit there, and you go there and you sign in, and part of your introduction or your induction ceremony into the post is you go on this run, and they usually hold it on Tuesdays and Thursdays during that week. And you go on this run with a brigade combat team, and the brigade combat team will run you around to historical markers on the installation. And at each one of those historical markers will be a soldier who is a what they call a Sergeant Audie Murphy soldier. And that Sergeant Audie Murphy soldier will talk about the history of that particular marker from one to end. They do it but strictly by memory. They're not reading anything off of note cards. They are really high speed, low drag individuals, top of the line soldiers, rank and material. And they do this. And we do some physical fitness at that location, then run to the next one. But it's really, really fun and interesting. So if you get the opportunity, not to say that you got to go run with the soldiers to get the effect, but go visit, go drive around, see some of the historical markers there. The Fort Riley is just full of history. I highly recommend that you do so if you're ever in the area. She goes on to say, "Thank you for asking about Philip. He was always in my lap or close by me. I had several cats, but he was the best. I miss his presence, his grumbling when I got home later than usual, and his sweet nature. I found him on a walk, sick and dehydrated, not quite weaned. I took him to the vet and expected them to put him to sleep, but the vet pronounced him a fine little cat, and I took him home. God willing, I'll run across another abandoned kitten someday. It's so damn sad they don't live longer. Thanks for having me on the show. It was fun and good conversation. Your librarian with quite the Texas drawl, Leslie. All errors courtesy of autocorrect." I'm sorry, I have to read that sentence. I really enjoy the fact that when you send me this email, I'm not sure if it's something that you have in the email or you're utilizing a text program that has the ability to spell check, but it's funny that all the errors of courtesy of autocorrect are down at the bottom of this. I actually enjoy it. That's pretty cool. Anyway, so thank you, Leslie. You know what? And did I apologize before? Now I can't remember. The caffeine is like totally eliminated any memory I have from like freaking 22 minutes ago. but again, Leslie, I did notice when I went back and listened to the episodes, and I have a tendency to do this, that I felt as though I bogarted a majority of the conversation, and I apologize that I didn't prepare you for the topics. It was a really short notice thing on your part, and I should not have done that to you. I know we had fun. We had great discussion, but I really feel as though it would have been fair to you to give you information of what we're going to talk about. I promise that will not happen next time. Please forgive me. So moving on. You know, I always talk in the beginning, in the introduction, where I like to talk to you all about shit. So we're going to have some shit talk here really quick. Literally shit talk, not figuratively speaking, literally. Excuse me, coffee. So here's what I mean. And this happened this past week. So I'm trying to keep things up to date, on par and square with the show. And obviously, we don't always get to do that because we don't ever really produce the show on time. We're trying to get better. Okay. It just takes time for us because of real life things that we got going on. I say this every time. I will say it again. I cannot wait to retire. Bottom line. Anyway, so talking about shit and bathroom etiquette. Now, I don't know if the demographic of the people that listen to this show. And Leslie, I know you're going to respond to this with your thoughts on what I'm about to talk on what I'm about to discuss here with everybody. If there's anybody else that has any opinion or any experiences or anything funny to laugh about in context about what I'm about to talk about here, please share it. I would love to know. But this has to do with men's bathroom etiquette. Now, I'm going to say a few things, and I don't mean any pun. I'm also going to, before I get started, that I've been doing this, we're like 24, 25 minutes into this podcast. My dogs have been quite nice. I don't want to jinx myself, but in the event that they start getting a little rambunctious, I'm going to apologize in advance. So if there's any delays or skips in the show, I'll go ahead and let you know. You know, and the one thing that I forgot to do the entire time for the past 24 business minutes was to have music in the background. But anyway, so moving on. So yeah, if my dogs act up, I apologize in advance. So going back to the topic of conversation, this happened to me this week, and it really got me thinking a little too much about this than I really anticipated. I don't put a lot of thought into this, but this, so let me just tell you what happened. So Monday morning, this past Monday, was up really early and made some coffee, had about 3 or 4 cups, and then the meetings for the morning began to ensue. In between the second and third meeting, I think we had like a 20-minute reprieve, and I really needed to piss. So going into the bathroom, and I'm going to be as descriptive as possible, and it's going to get gross, just saying. So preparing you right now. You walk in through the door. The door has a button for handicapped people, right? So the door will open automatically. The door does not push open smoothly. It is a little bit rough to start, and then it finally opens up. So it's, you know, it's got that little hydraulic action going where you've got a little bit of force, little bit of friction. Anyway, so you walk in, and as you walk into the bathroom, to your immediate left is a 2-person sink. Adjacent to your right is 2 standing stalls. And next to the second stall, closer to the far wall in front of you, are 2 enclosed stalls. So 4 stalls altogether, 2 sit, 2 standing. Now, I walk in there, and I don't hear anybody when I first walk in. I go straight to the standing stall, and I'm taking a leak. And because I've been holding it for so long, I felt like Austin Powers in the first movie where they, you know, they took him out of the ice block and he's standing there peeing for like forever and a day. That's exactly how I felt. And there is something about urinating when you hold it for so long and you're releasing out of your body that your body is so relaxed. It's so calm. It feels so good that whatever fluid you have into is being fully expelled. But as I'm there draining my main vein, I hear a little bit of a noise, a little bit of a rustle in the stall. Not the one immediately next to me, but the one on the far wall as you enter the bathroom. And it seemed as though this person was doing everything they could not to fart, not to shit until after I left. So my assumption at this point was this person probably just put their paper gasket down on the toilet seat and sat their butt down. And I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm not rushing. This is feeling good. I'm getting this fluid out of me. I've been holding it for so damn long that I'm finally relieved to get this done. In the meantime, tension is building in the stall next to the wall. And then I turn around and I'm getting ready, you know, being in uniform, with the belt that I wear, and the belt is a little bit more of a thick, heavy duty type belt. I have the tendency, you know, I have to adjust, have to make sure it's everything's uniform, dress right, dress. So it takes me a little bit, tuck my t-shirt in, and military t-shirts, and this is going on a different path, but military t-shirts, the new ones they have are fairly long, so it takes a little bit more tuck time. In deference to back in the day in the 80s and 90s, where if you bent over, your t-shirt came untucked because they were too short or they shrank too much. These ones are actually absolutely great. So it takes me a little time. And so as I'm doing this, I kind of hear this. Like he's doing everything to like keep the air from escaping because he doesn't want to offend. I don't know. It was just kind of funny. And I'm sitting here thinking about it going, dude, if you got to take a shit, let it go. Don't try and hold the fart back because that toilet bowl is your worst enemy. So if you look at the toilet bowl, I mean, it's a shape for a reason. You know, it's made for somebody to sit down as comfortably as possible and relieve themselves. But if you look at the interior shape of the bowl, it's a freaking subwoofer. It's an amplifier. It doesn't matter if you try to fart so silently, try to keep it in, you know, either you're going to fart like a gnat or you're going to fart like a cannon, one way or the other. Either way, that noise is amplified. When you go to take a dump and that projectile hits the water, that noise is amplified. You hear the splash. And oh my God, if you got the taco shits, you're fucked because wet farts and shit hitting that water, I mean, that's echoed through the bathroom. There is nothing you can do to keep that from happening. And as much as you're trying to be courteous, dude, don't hold back on my account. Fucking let the shit fly. Because oh my God, dude, why are you doing this? And I only say this because I know exactly how that guy feels. I don't know how women feel about this. I don't know if women experience the same thing. Is it embarrassing to feel something like that? I don't know. I just look at it like, damn, man, everybody has an orifice of some type. So whether you have a vagina, whether you have a penis, you could take a leak. Everybody's got an asshole. Those are made for a specific function, made for a specific reason. However, my grandmother used to tell me that I wasn't eating right because I fart too much. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, well, when you fart, that means you're not digesting your food properly. I'm like, okay, but if we were meant to digest everything properly, and shoot, my grandmother was very critical of my mom's cooking. Very critical. She was critical of everything. God rest her soul. But, and I'm not getting off topic, I don't think, because yeah, one has to do with the other. But she would turn around. I turned around and told my grandmother, I said, well, if God didn't want us to fart, he wouldn't have given us assholes. That didn't go over well with my grandmother. My grandmother was very, very strict. She grew up in a very strict environment. And if you drop a freaking cuss word or anything closely related to, she would unleash the fucking fury. Anyway, going back. So I look at it like, dude, what are you doing, man? Just let it fucking fly. Enjoy yourself. You are in an inner sancto sanctorum. Nobody knows who you are unless that individual is really, really fucking nosy and wants to bend down and see whose shoes they are and then recognizes you by your shoes because they saw you before they went to the bathroom earlier. I don't know. But you can't, don't hold back. Just fucking let it fly. There's nothing you can do. Now, on the other hand, I have been in situations where if I just sit down, I will patiently wait for somebody to leave. But in some cases, you just can't hold back. You gotta go, you gotta go. Now, I do courtesy flush. Once I let her rip, I do a courtesy flush, get her out there, but I never flush the toilet to try and hide the fact that I need to fart, that I'm about to torpedo the water with a loud ploosh. Or that if I had a bad taco or bad burrito the night before, whatever I ate, that if I'm getting ready to paint the fence, it's going to happen regardless, right? So you just can't control it. It's natural. Deal with it. You know, now I will tell you, poopery. Okay. So if you want to talk about etiquette, poopery works. If you've never tried it, I would say just go get a small bottle. It is expensive for a little small spray bottle. I will tell you, I think it was like the one I had, I got for a White Elephant gift, and I happened to go look it up because I wanted to see what other scent, because I didn't believe this was true. I looked at that. And I said, this is not real. This is a gag gift. Turns out it's real. Most of you have already heard of it, probably used it. I don't know, but I thought it was a gag gift. So I looked it up, found out there are other scents and everything that it comes in. And so I tried it. And it actually works. Now, what it doesn't do is, you know, from where your ass, from the bottom of your ass to the top of the water surface, there's nothing you could do about the air in between. Poopery doesn't take care of that. Okay. So if you're having a bad day, that there's some smell that's going to come out, but I will tell you that layer that it puts on top of the water is like an oil slick. And it keeps everything trapped under the water. So it gives you an ample amount of time to flush and really get it out. The only problem is if you have to keep going, that if you're going to have to continue spraying in order to keep the smell down. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to let it rip and don't even bother. But it does work. So again, has anybody else had this experience? I don't know. I looked at it as kind of funny because it felt as though I could sense the tension that this individual was going through between trying to freaking keep their butt cheeks from letting any air out whatsoever. And it was confirmed because as soon as that door shut, that dude unleashed the fucking fury onto that bowl. I felt so bad for the porcelain god. It was just really sad. So whatever he ate the night before, my hat's off to you. Much respect. You know, thank you for taking me into consideration because I have walked into bathrooms where I walked in and as soon as that smell hit my nose, I went to use another bathroom. Because if people don't pay attention, when you walk into a bathroom that smells that bad, that stuff gets in the fibers of your clothing. And then you're going to turn around and walk out. Somebody's going to walk in. And even after that person exits, that person is long gone. That smell stays. And you walk in there and walk out and that smell follows you, you're going to get looked at as a culprit. for making that bathroom smell bad. It just happens that way. So just saying, you know, and if you can't put freaking sprayers, put some air wick, put some Lysol in the fucking stalls. I don't know why people don't do that. I don't know why, you know, and we don't have fart suckers in our bathroom. Fart suckers don't exist. And sometimes fart suckers don't help either, because no matter how powerful they are, with the exception, my brother's bathroom at his house, he's got a fart sucker that sounds like a damn wind tunnel. I mean, it pulls air through under the door and creates this cooling effect in the bathroom. I kid you not. Anyway, let me get off the shit talk. Shall we talk about coffee instead? I think so. So anyway, let's go ahead and move on to our segment, which we call Media Beans. And this is where I talk a little bit about our caffeine consumption and who is responsible for fueling us here at Caffeine Driven Media. And today, we are drinking coffee from Black Insomnia Coffee Company. Hold on. Speaking of which, I was really wanting to talk about this today. Holy crap. So, my niece, I think she was the one that sent me the link in Facebook Messenger some time ago, and I kind of put it on the back burner and, cause I had other coffees that I wanted to look at. And finally, I went ahead and ordered some and got some in, and it came in yesterday. Again, if you paid attention to the Facebook post and Instagram, we got the coffee in and I made some last night. Now, here's where I get into the conversation. Excuse me. I have a Breville coffee maker, what I deem to be the Cadillac of conventional coffee makers, right? It's got its own burr grinder. It's got settings. I mean, it still makes great cups of coffee. Okay. It is absolutely phenomenal. I've had it for a number of years. Wouldn't trade it for any other conventional coffee maker in the world right now. I'm just very particular to it. I'm a bit of a Breville fanboy. But this morning, about 4 a.m., maybe 5 a.m., lost track of time, but this morning made it two ways, made it with a Chemex and then made it with the French press. And I will tell you, I am really starting to steer away from conventional coffee makers. Don't get me wrong. I'll still use mine, but my preference is French press and Chemex. Thanks. Simply because there's no mechanical barrier in between the brewing process, right? So you have a pump, you have a water system that the water goes through to make the coffee through the filter, but you eliminate that just by pouring the water why am I getting locked up here? I was able to talk about everything else today, but now I'm getting a coffee and I can't talk about it. So with the Chemex, if you used a Chemex before, all you have is the filter and pouring directly on the coffee. One of the most natural ways to have your coffee made, or use the French press, where all you're really doing with the French press is omitting the coffee grounds and just going straight to the coffee. Less drinking Turkish coffee where there's no filters. It's just boiling water and the coffee itself, and you're drinking the sludge, which, by the way, nothing has beat Turkish coffee yet, but I will tell you, this Black Insomnia coffee is coming pretty close. Had two batches, again, one French press, one Chemex this morning, and both batches were really, really great. I will tell you, I was a little particular because I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to the freshness of the bean, because the package was marked packed in 2018. I don't remember the exact month, but 2018. And I'm like, here we are almost at the end of 2019. So I was a little leery, but when I opened the bag, and I got to go back and reference how long coffee can stay fresh once vacuum sealed. But I opened the bag and I mean, it smelled great. And then went ahead and made it. And as I'm making it and I'm watching it brew through the Chemex, I'm like, wow, it had a just really nice color, nice consistency. I didn't have to make it strong. It really didn't give me the caffeine content, and I'll pull up the website here in a minute, but it really just, the flavor was just like, pow. I was expecting it's bold, but very, very smooth. So let's talk about this. So if Black Insomnia Coffee, the world's strongest coffee, okay, you can find them at www.blackinsomnia.coffee. Okay. And .com. Yeah, that's it. www.blackinsomnia, all one word, .coffee.com. And if you go to their about page, I'm just going to read you off Okay, this is the caffeine really, really kicking in today. Black Insomnia, the world's strongest coffee. This is Black Insomnia coffee, and regardless what the pretenders might claim, this is the world's strongest coffee as certified by Caffeine Informer and other science people who know their stuff. This is an honest, no-frills blend with plenty of kick. We are what we say we are, for better or for worse, the key to keeping you up all night long. What happens to you after you drink our coffee is on you. Okay. Best served black. And I drink coffee black regardless. So I don't ever put any sugars. Don't put anything, any creamers or anything. I've transitioned from foo-foo coffee to just drinking it straight black. And yes, best served black is on point. The pureness of Black Insomnia will give you the kick you crave and deserve. With no added anything, this is unadulterated coffee at its finest with none of the BS. If you don't get what we mean, it has no additives of any kind, then this coffee isn't for you. We have now refined our coffee blend and handed over the roasting to an expert team of roasters in Bamberg, Germany, who have been in the business since 1932. Their knowledge plus a carefully selected blend of high quality Arabica and Robusta beans has made the new Black Insomnia even better. Roasted in an old age Italian tradition, slowly and carefully in a small batch drum roaster allows for a smooth yet strong aroma, robust flavor, velvety body, and heady crema without any unpleasant bitterness or acidity. Nutty aromas, caramel sweetness, and a dark chocolate aftertaste will make your palate sing while the extraordinary caffeine kick word works its magic. And it is absolutely, everything is on point. Exactly. Everything how they described is exactly what we experienced last night and today. It goes on to read, this isn't everyone's cup of joe, be warned. In the wise words of poor old and hopefully completely removed from cinematic appearances now, Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. Just like you, we had to make a choice. Our original batches came out with a much higher level of caffeine content, but we found that it might just be irresponsible to make that available to the masses, so we cut it back to safer levels, just as we hope that you will too. So, we know how great it tastes and feels. But try it, not overdo it. 1 to 2 cups a day should be all you need for your average Monday. I've already exceeded that. And it's Sunday. This is the coffee for the people who want to sleep when they want, work when they want, and play when they want. Life is filled with awesome shit you might... Yeah. Life is filled with awesome shit. You might just miss it if you blink for even 1 second. So open your eyes and wake the fuck up. This is the world's strongest coffee. I will tell you, I really enjoy it. We bought it whole bean, as always. Surfing their site right now as we're talking. It's kind of funny. So they do have apparel if you're interested in apparel, which a lot of people who like coffee companies do. Let's see. Let's take a look at their coffee because I think so. Yep. Reasonably priced. So if you do a one-time purchase for a 1 pound bag, whole bean, or ground, it's $19.99, or you could subscribe, save 20%, do a subscription, have it delivered in frequency, however many times you want it per month for $15.99. You have the choice of whole or ground. The bag size is strictly 1 pound and you could order as many bags as you want. There's also, I don't know, this also comes in a can. Wasn't able to find the can, but either way, it doesn't matter. The coffee's great. So yeah, if you want to visit their website, go to blackinsomnia.coffee.com, the world's strongest coffee. The logo is a big circle with a white X in the middle. So you know, that you're in the right place when you find it. One more thing I want to look at. Thank you for your interest. Okay. Something here. News. Let's see if there's anything on the news front. Mythbusters, lighter roasts have more caffeine. Huh. Going to have to read that on the next show. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Let's see what this says. Oh, interesting. Sorry, I'm surfing. My apologies, but I wanted to see. So on their website, it says Mythbusters, lighter roasts have more caffeine. Wrong, so wrong, and yet a coffee myth that has been doing the rounds for years. There are so many factors that affect caffeine content, but the degree of roast is not one of them. In fact, there are arguments to suggest that a lighter roast would yield less caffeine. So here are a few facts, and I mean real facts, and some tips on how you can optimize the caffeine content of your brews at home. If you read the article about our Robusta and Arabica blend, you'll already know that Robusta has significantly more caffeine than Arabica. My first point about roast styles is that you'll generally find the lighter roast are from the specialty or third wave coffee roasters who tend to only use Arabica. Therefore, the lighter roast will have lower caffeine content than darker Robusta roast. Caffeine is an incredibly stable chemical whose concentration in a single coffee bean will basically stay the same after roasting as it was beforehand. If you take into account other elements that decrease during roasting, including the drastic change in density, you could even argue that a darker roast bean with lower density would yield more caffeine when brewed. This depends, however, on the vital step in brewing. So, how do you measure your coffee? Do you use a coffee scoop for your whole beans and or ground coffee, or do you weigh it out for each cup? Weighing out your coffee, whether it's whole bean or ground, will help you maximize the amount of caffeine you're getting. So remember this picture. If you go to the website, there shows like a medium, like a brown bean, a light brown bean, a dark green bean, and a light green coffee bean. Okay. So remember this picture. The top row is the typical example of Arabica. The bottom Robusta. Beans come in all shapes and sizes. There are over 100 species of coffee available to grind up and turn into liquid gold, and they're all different sizes and shapes, from the teeny tiny pea berry to the ginormous geisha. Geisha? Because of this, brewing based on scoops means you won't be consistently brewing the same weight of beans. That means you'll also be missing out on caffeine. Consider Black Insomnia for a moment. Its core strength comes from the larger percentage of Robusta. From the picture above, you can see that the Robusta is smaller. This means when blended with Arabica, you have different sizes and weights. Larger beans don't always weigh more than smaller beans. In fact, we tested this in the lab. Four of the larger Arabica beans from Black Insomnia weighed on a high precision digital scale were the same as four of the smaller Robusta beans, or 0.6 grams to be exact. But the Arabica beans are larger, which means your scoops will be uneven. If you weigh out our beans, you are guaranteed to have the same results every time. For best results, we absolutely recommend weighing out your coffee before brewing. We've had a number of questions over the past couple of months on how much coffee we recommend for different cup sizes. If you're weighing out your coffee and brewing water, we recommend measuring in grams with a ratio of 1 to 17. This means 17 grams of water per 1 gram of coffee. If you really want to continue measuring by scoops, measure it out post-grind to maximize the surface area of the coffee in the spoon. For volume-based measurements, we recommend a ratio of 1 to 4, that is 1 tablespoon of ground coffee per 4 ounces of water. The more you know. So yes, if you want to read this, article that's on the Black Insomnia Coffee website, I would recommend that you do. I enjoyed reading it to you because I was interested and I learned something today. Having been, you know, really into coffee for a number of years, I learned a little bit something more. So this segues nicely into what I wanted to talk about next really quick was how do we, you know, one thing that we don't cover is our preference in how we roast it. Yes, we do weigh it out. We do something similar, maybe not exact, but we brew the coffee in such a way that we know we're going to get a kick out of it. For example, we utilize double filtered cold water. Okay, so we tested this. So let me back up. So yesterday in the Breville, I used regular filtered water, one-time filtered water, extremely cold, put it in there. What I don't like doing is putting hot water into something that's already going to make hot water. So in my opinion, I look at it as if you use hot water in a coffee maker only for it to get hotter to make the coffee, to me, the coffee is going to come out very bitter and more acidic, and it's just going to taste bad. You're losing the flavor of the coffee. So go with extremely cold water. As far as a cold water temperature, I don't have an exact temperature, but I would say whether it comes out of, if you put it in a pure water filter type device inside your refrigerator, and depending on what your refrigerator settings are, that's probably going to be the perfect temperature for the coffee water. But so we use single filter on Friday through the Breville. Excuse me. The coffee came out great. Very nice, very smooth. And we like our coffee bold, so we have a tendency to really overdo it. But this morning, we did double filter in both the Chemex and the French press, and having it made in those form factors specifically, there was a lot, the color was better, the coffee was smoother. I guess just something within the mechanics of a coffee maker take away from the coffee, in my opinion. It could be just something psychological because I've been used to utilizing, the manual way of doing coffee, i.e. grinding it with a hand grinder, utilizing a Chemex where nothing's mechanical. The only thing mechanical is the human body pouring the water onto the coffee directly itself and having it go through a paper filter, or pouring the coffee directly on itself, mixing it and using a French press. So, but either way, I think when you take out the mechanics, when you take out heating elements and things of the like that get that water where it's at in a coffee maker, this is why I say maybe I am spoiled in the way that I drink my coffee now, because I have a lesser tendency to use a traditional coffee maker, even though, again, I love my Breville. I like the other form factors better. Just saying. Not to say that you won't enjoy the coffee if you make it in a traditional coffee maker, if you just don't have the time to do a French press in the morning or to utilize a Chemex. Realistically, I think it takes probably 10 minutes max overall, which probably is about the same amount of time as your coffee maker. You just have some extra steps. If you want to mitigate that time in the morning, if you're a person that's always on the run, you could always take your coffee pot, pre-fill it with the water that evening, put it in the refrigerator, and then this way all you have to do is fire up, put the pot on the stove, grind your beans, have it at the ready. One detail, if you utilize a Chemex, one thing I learned, and I'll give credit to it because this is how I learned it, Element Coffee Company, www.elementcoffeecompany or Element Coffee, Elemental Coffee, I'm sorry. If you Google them or you do a YouTube search, they go through different form factors of making coffee, from siphon, Chemex to French press, things of the like. I pay attention to a lot of those videos because these are the expert baristas in coffee making, and they provide you a lot of details. So one of the things that I did learn from Elemental Coffee was that if you utilize a Chemex, when you heat up the water to a certain temperature, like say 100 degrees initially, rinse out the paper filter to get rid of all the particulates in the filter, dump the water, and then do another rinse probably at about close to 150, 160 degrees. That may not be exact, but that's what I do. And this way you rinse out even more particulates, then dump out the water. Now, when I say dump out the water, you have to keep the filter within the Chemex, but the Chemex has a reservoir that will allow the water to flow through without you losing the filter. I kind of stick my fingers in there to hold the filter in place, even though it's wet and should be sticking to the glass. But that's just a safety measure because you have to dump all that water out. Then the other piece of advice I have is take the coffee, put it in the filter, and wait until just before the water's boiling to do so. Because what you don't want is you don't want the coffee sitting in a wet filter waiting for the water to come to a full boil, about 200 degrees, and then pour it in there. To me, I think that takes away from it. I learned my mistake that way. It just comes out a lot better if you wait until like that moment to actually pour the coffee grounds in, tap the side of the Chemex to level it out, and then pour the water on top. I usually like to go very slow, starting from the outer rim into the middle, and then fill it all the way up to the brim, let it start to brew, as in start to drain into the Chemex. And then as it's draining about midway through, if you have more water left, then I trace the outside of the coffee grounds, the residue that's left, and then wash it back into the bottom, and then let it fill back up, and then let it do its final brew. So that's how I do it. Anyway, so I'm looking at this coffee. I will tell you, we've had a lot of it this morning, and I would have to say, for something that I was a little skeptical about, I would give Black Insomnia Coffee a 5 coffee bean out of 5 coffee bean rating, no matter what the form factor you use. The coffee just comes out really great, really smooth, and I'm really, really enjoying it. Regardless of the date, if you decide to order and you get a package, do not worry about the package date. Open it up, grind it, brew it. I will tell you, you will enjoy it. And I think that's where we're going to end the show for today. I don't know if it's a placebo. I doubt it's a placebo effect. I've been drinking. I've had 5 cups because I've been pouring. So this is what I did. I have a thermos because I like my coffee hot. So if you didn't know, I pour my coffee into a thermos so that as my coffee gets cold, I have a way to warm it up and drink it hot during the entire time. But not to say you have to do that. I just do that out of preference. So yes, 5 coffee bean rating out of 5 coffee bean rating. www.blackinsomnia.coffee.com is the website. go try it out, order it, and tell me what you think. I'd be interested in hearing what your opinions is of it. I will say right now, it's got a high caffeine kick, and I'm really, really enjoying it. So anyway, I think I'm gonna go ahead and end the show there. I'm glad everybody tuned in. Hopefully we could get another show out here next week. We're trying to get some more coffee in to do some more reviews. Hopefully they'll come in on time a little bit earlier than Friday or Saturday. So we'll let you know. But anyway, yes. What did I say? We're going to end right here. No Syntax is a production of Caffeine Driven Media. Music is by Rim Sky Music and can be found at premiumbeat.com. That's www.premiumbeat.com. Sound editing. My dog sneezed, sorry. Sound editing is by Auphonic.com. That's www.auphonic.com. Background music can be found at MelodyLoops.com. That's www.MelodyLoops.com. Want to send us an email, have comments about today's or other shows? We want to hear from you. Email us at NoSyntaxPodcast, that's all one word, NoSyntaxPodcast@gmail.com, or post your comments on our website at www.NoSyntaxPodcast.net. You can also follow me on Twitter at NoSyntaxPodcast or Facebook at facebook.com/no-syntax. Don't forget, we are on iTunes. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. Good, bad, indifferent, it doesn't matter. We will still love you. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to each and every one of you soon.